What'd you have for dinner, Grace?
Some ground turkey, some zucchini, a little shredded cheese in there, a little sauce, a little bit of sauce. What'd you have?
Why are you talking like you're from the city or something?
I don't know that that accent exists anywhere else but in my head.
That's, I had leftover brisket that I smoked on the old
Oh,
smoker.
what?
Yeah, I know. I do that. I'm a thing. It's a thing.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, that's about it. So it's Monday. We're here. We got to do this show, I guess, huh?
Yeah, let's do this show. It's gonna be a good one.
Guys, did you know that a jiffy is an actual unit of time?
I did not know that.
Yeah, well, guess what? A jiffy is 1/100th of a second.
Oh, okay. That's great to know. Thank you.
So really, if you say I'll talk to you in a jiffy or see you in a jiffy, it's not accurate because it's really fast.
What's a GIF?
That's peanut butter. Yep.
What is like a GIF? Is that like a unit of time? It's not. It's just
Well,
peanut
it's
butter.
just straight delicious peanut butter. Actually, it's the one and only peanut butter. And if you tell me there's a different peanut butter, I'll punch you in your stinking face because Jif is the only peanut butter out there.
Okay, well, I know what I am gifting you next time I see you, and that is going to be some gourmet peanut butter.
And
Let's
that's
see if I can
gonna,
change his mind.
yeah, and you're gonna see me soon. We'll talk about that on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Grace, did you know when you put that little thing on of toothpaste on your little toothbrush, do you know that has a name?
What is the name?
It's called a nurdle.
It's a nurdle?
Nurdle.
This is my favorite fun fact
Oh my
ever.
gosh, yes. So
Okay.
anytime you put it on there, you can think of me and say, I'm putting my nurdle on. Not a
I'm just
dollop,
a
nothing.
little
Just a nurdle.
nurdle.
N
A
U R
nurdle.
D L E, a nurdle.
Nurdle on your toothbrush. All
All
right.
right. I guess we gotta get back to this podcast thing we do. We should probably start it. All right, ready? I got a quick simple one for you. You're gonna like this.
Okay.
Grace, it's super hot outside, which makes it hard to run. Let's talk about all the sweat on episode 71.
I'm Eric Idiot Runner Kosek.
And I'm Grace Hot Pants Langheim. Eric is all business in the front of the pack, and I am all about the party in the back.
That's right, business up front and party in the back. Together, we are the Running Mullet.
And we are going to talk about every aspect of running, the podium to the DNF and everything in between.
If you are a runner, this show is for you. Now sit back, get out your foam roller, and enjoy the party.
Seriously though, I don't I I'm not heat acclimated. I don't like running in this heat right now. I'm not a happy person in this heat when I try to do the act of running. I felt like a 75-year-old chain smoker when I went to run 3 miles with the cross country team today.
Did you break out your shorty shorts though, your cheetah shorts?
No, I mean I'm running with kids, so I gotta keep it under control.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
So I gotta moderate what I do. Yeah,
Okay.
I think it's probably hotter down where you're at, where you're living currently, but I don't care because it was dumb. It
Yeah.
was like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
I don't
hot.
know. It's hot. You got a sweatshirt on. You must be in some cold AC, huh?
Yeah, it's nice and chilly inside here. Yep.
Nice. How are you, Grace? It's great to see you on this episode 71. I've waited all week to see your gorgeous face. How are
Oh,
you?
I'm great now that I'm here chatting with you, Eric. How was your weekend?
My weekend was pretty good, pretty good, pretty uneventful. It was hot up here, so just got a couple runs in and trying to think what else I did. It was 4th of July weekend, but we didn't really have any crazy plans because this was a dumb year where the 4th and lands on a Thursday, and I worked Friday, which is probably a dumb idea, but just life.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Had a little fun on the 4th, went over to my friend Jen's house, the pool, She had the pool and worked on Friday, but then Saturday was super fun. I went hiking with Lacey and then hit up the Black Forest Trail on Sunday.
Yeah, good for you putting in the time and effort to get up there and get on that sucker.
I tell you what, and I have very limited time to do it. I'm booked for the next 7 weekends. I have something going on. It is a busy July and August. So I don't know. I'm all for it, though. Like, we should all be so blessed to have a lot going on and a lot to do. And I'm very thankful that I get to do those cool stuff, being at races, volunteering and running and race directing and all that cool stuff. And you know, life isn't always like that, but it is right now. So that's cool.
Yeah. And before you know it, it's going to be all over. And you're like, oh, I wish I was doing it.
Yeah.
So that's good. Now we're really busy too. I don't know about the next 7 weekends booked, but I would say it's pretty darn close to that. Yeah. It's just, I don't even try to keep, it's like week to week. I don't want to know 3 weeks out. I just need to know, like, tell me what I'm doing tomorrow.
Yeah. Pretty bonkers, but that's all right.
I see you got some awesome bags for your Slopeside Slumber Party.
Yeah. Slopeside Slumber Party is coming up. And my goal with the Slumber Party is to eventually provide for participants all the things that they would need if they were going to go to a Slumber Party. So the first year they got a pillowcase and the second year they got a little blankie. And now this year is a laundry bag so that you can take all your dirty laundry home with you.
Nice.
Yeah. I thought it was something a little different. I like to try to give people stuff that they're going to use, which I think everybody uses their stuff from races, but something a little different, you know, different than a t-shirt and different than a mug. Although I will never turn down a t-shirt or a mug. There's no hate on those either, but something a little different.
A t-shirt? What's a t-shirt? You said t-shirt.
Yeah, they're coming soon.
Oh, okay. Just making sure. Yep. Had caught you out on that. I've never seen a t-shirt.
I appreciate it. Yeah. I'll show you this weekend. It's very gray gardens.
Can't wait. All right. So you right? Should we get on with the show?
Yeah, let's do it.
Should we keep small talking?
No, we got a great guest. Let's talk about Western States.
Western States. So we talked a little about Western States last weekend. And then we realized that we have a local runner who went out there and experienced all there is to experience, and he managed to be really lucky in getting out there too. So I'm not going to go over his ultra sign up stats or anything like that. If you want to, you can, but he's done a lot of local stuff. He did the Triple Crown and Blacklist last year, so he's no stranger to this stuff. Mike Busada, Mr. Mike Busada, thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I don't know about Grace, but I want to start off from the beginning here. So what you got into Western States on one ticket, which everybody probably hates you for that. And they rightly should.
Yeah, a little bit.
So what race did you earn that ticket on? Let's start from the beginning.
So I did the Blacklist, but of the Triple Crown, both Worlds In and Eastern States are qualifiers. So I put in Worlds In as my actual entry ticket qualifier.
So last year was the first time that you actually entered any tickets for Western States.
Yep, correct. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. That was the first I learned of the process and how you enter the lottery and how you do qualifiers and what it all means. And so, yep.
I'm not a fan of the process of these, of like UTMB and a point system. Mm-hmm. And just like, I don't want to, for some reason, I have this like mental block. I don't want to learn how to do this stuff. Western States isn't that awfully hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Western States is easy. UTMB, I think, is a lot harder with the points that you get per race that you run. I really don't understand that. UTMB is not a race I really have any interest in running just because it's so publicized and so big. But right. Western has so much history behind it. So,
yeah, it's one of those races that as somebody from outside of the trail community, they'll hear about this one race. They'll hear about Barkley or Western States and they'll say, oh, you're a trail runner. Are you going to run Western States? And you're like, no, I'm not going to run Western States, because statistically, it takes 10 years to get in,
yeah.
right? So there's around 350 people who get in. It changes slightly depending on the year because it's an average of the 3 years will allow a certain number of participants based on their permitting. And there's some there's thousands of people who put their names in the hat. So statistically, it takes about 10 years to get in, although that's not the only way to get into Western States. There are other ways. But if you get in by lottery, it's about 10 years. And so when you answer that question, when I answer that question, I always say, no, because statistically it takes 10 years to get in. There's no way I'm going to get in. And you, sir, you did it. You like one ticket, you got in. And did you watch the raffle when they pull the names? Did you watch it?
No, so that's even funny itself. So I'm a hunter. And so I was actually at my in-laws during deer season. And so I was down there and I was actually, I think I had hunted that morning. I took a nap and my phone started blowing up and I woke up and Reagan McCoy, what are you talking about? And so I had no idea. And so then I start, my friend Lauren texted me, a couple other people texted me and then I was like, what are you guys talking about? And then they finally said, you got into Western States, and my jaw hit the floor. I was like, no way.
Wow. And so,
yeah. I totally forgot that the lottery had even taken place. So.
Oh my gosh. So you heard from through the grapevine, through your cell phone blowing up. And then now you're married. Does your wife run? How did you break the news to her?
No. So, she doesn't run. So when I did the blacklist last year, that was even kind of pushing it. And so after I did that, I told her, I was like, I'm going to back off a little bit, take the fall off and, you know, just run for fun. And, only thing I had on the docket was actually run for the diamonds that I had just done, which is on Thanksgiving morning. Mm-hmm. And, so at that point, I really only had Heiner 50K signed up for this coming year, which I did. And so, she was pregnant at the time with our third baby, which is, I have three girls. And so once I told her that, I was like, honey, I have to do this. And she was behind it. It took a little bit of convincing, but she was behind it.
Yeah. So, gosh. I think it's just, oh man, if you're not a runner, you wouldn't know, you know, you wouldn't know how difficult it is to get into this race and what, and to be able to not just get into the race, but be in good physical condition to be able to do it. And then you went out and you finished it.
Yep. Yeah. It couldn't have been better. Like doing the blacklist last year, it was my third 100 miler I've done. And so it was a buildup. I swam in college and then I kind of transitioned to running. And so, it was kind of natural there. And so, but yeah, I'm in the prime of my life, mid 30s. It couldn't have been better. Really.
Fabulous. Now, did you do the camp? Did you go to the Western States camp?
No, I didn't. Nope. I did all my training out here. And so I was totally new to the area when I flew out there. I flew out Wednesday before the race, got there Wednesday afternoon, evening. And then, we came back Monday afterwards.
Okay. All right. Now tell us about the festivities. Did you get to see cool runners, famous runners and hang out? How was all that?
Yep. So it's actually a little bit harder to see, to run into them than you think. There's tons of people. And so there's vendors all over the place. You're in a little, you're in Olympic Village, which is, Olympic Valley. So there's a ski resort there. And so people all over the place, but the one person I did see that, besides when they were on stage, like all the elite guys on stage, is I was running the bike path Thursday morning to loosen up. Cause I remember my right IT band and calf were like super tight from sitting on a plane for 10 hours flying out there. And so I was loosened up and I actually ran right by Jim Wamsley and I was like, hey, Jim. And he just was a quick, how's it going? And blasted right by me. And I was running. So I only did a quick like 5 miler. And then my buddy, Mike Heaston, who paced me, and Mike Tromley, Mike Heaston's very fast. And so he actually wanted to run up the first climb and get a little bit more mileage in. I ended up going back to the hotel room, the lodge. And when he came back, he said that Walmsley had run up the mountain. And when he was climbing, he was just bombing down it, like bombing. And so that was the two like sightings that I saw, or you know, that I was associated with. I didn't see anyone else. I didn't see Katie Scheid until she was on stage. Mm-hmm. I didn't see any of the other guys, Rod or any of them, until they were on stage.
Wow.
But so
still very cool. Tell us a little bit more about that, you know, what's it like the couple days before the race? Is there stuff to do? Is it too packed to even get dinner? How's all of it work?
So what I did was we flew out there Wednesday, and Tahoe is actually right down the road. It's about 15 minutes. And so I actually wanted to get out of Olympic Valley to eat because there was just so many people. It was like the one thing I didn't research and have planned. I had everything planned, where we were going. I had directions for all my crew, what to do, where to go. But but food was one thing I did not kind of look into. And so we actually drove to Tahoe to eat. There's a lot of great restaurants there. And so it was a good place to like to kind of get out of all the chaos. On Thursday, there's a crew meeting on Thursday for like how to crew a Western States runner from like 1:30 to 2:30 or whatnot. My crew couldn't find it, so they missed it. Which is fine.
That's a little scary though. If your crew can't find the crew meeting.
I know. Gosh. And so I kind of gave them a little bit of crap for it, but I'm like, well, yeah, it is what it is. And so then I just came back Thursday and kind of like organize. I take all my stuff out of my luggage and actually put it in my duffel bag that would be my crew bag. And then I went over it with my crew to be like, this is where stuff is. And so there were other things that were going on. That's where they actually had the elite men, elite women up on stage, kind of on a panel. But it's like pure sun out there, and you're at 6,000 feet. The closer to the sun, you can feel it. And so I actually stayed out of the sun. I kind of stayed in our little lodge that we had. And then Friday you go and there's a Hoka High Camp Challenge, which is actually where your crew gets to run up the first 3 mile climb, which is pretty cool. So my three guys did that and got really cool videos of that. And then while they were doing that, I went back and checked in. And so that's a whole process too. You're in a long line and then you get your bib, you get your photo taken, and then they just give you a ton of crap, a backpack, all this like extra swag. And then after that, and then that's where you get your yellow wristband. And then that stays on until you're done. And so that's like your entry. And then I just headed back to the lodge, hung out. We got lunch and then hung out some more. And then I tried to go to bed around like 8:00, 8:30. It's kind of hard to sleep, obviously. But there are a lot of things to do. I just had in my mind before I went out there, I wasn't really interested in a lot of the extra stuff. I wanted to see it and be part of it, but also it was the one shot that I have for this race. And so wanted to give it my all. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for trail runners too, I mean, we're kind of accustomed to the smaller race, you know, that have a cap of 150 runners and half of them don't have crew or pacers, you know? Yeah. So we're kind of like, to have so much hubbub going on might be a little like, man, this is why I don't road run, you know, this is why I don't do the rock and roll half marathon is because of the big crowd. So I could probably be a little easier to settle in and not get sucked into everything, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So who did you bring for crew for pacing? Did they have a van? Like, tell us about that setup.
Yeah. Yep. So I brought David Hoffman, who's a friend of mine. I work with him here at my job. And then my buddy Mike Tromley I brought, who is a lifelong friend. I've known him since I moved up to Pennsylvania. So I was in high school. And so he's actually paced me for all of my 100 milers I've done so far, the three. And then another guy I work with named Mike Heaston I brought with me as well. And so I basically took care of everything in terms of all the planning. And so I figured out the lodge, I got the hotel at the end, and I went and got a seven seater van, ended up being a Cadillac like hatchback. And so That's what they gave me. I didn't do the suburb. I just got enough room to be able to get the job done. Cause a lot of these A stations are, you get to a certain point and then they shuttle you in. So you're not on these horrible mountain passes. You're on some dirt road mount, but it's not like super sketchy where you need like four wheel drive or anything. Mm-hmm. But yep, that's what we had. And yeah.
Okay. So you and three people. So that's pretty nimble. That's not too big of a crew. Yeah.
It's not. And I kind of, as you learn the course, how it like, it loops down and then goes back up and whatnot. There's certain aid stations that you can have crew, obviously, but the way that they have it and the way that the road access is really limited, you ideally need two crews if you want to have a lot of crew access. And I didn't have that. So the first time I could see my crew was mile 30 and then mile 55. And so there's a lot of gaps in there. Whereas if you had crew A and crew B, you could, the first time you could see your crew would be Duncan Canyon, which is about 24 miles and then 30. And then there's another time that's halfway in between that. But if you had your crew go to Duncan Canyon, it takes them 3.5 hours to get back to Forestall Road, which is the main road that kind of goes along the course. So they would miss you if you had them do that and then tried to get back to Michigan Bluff at mile 55, they would probably miss you. And so that's, so the first time I saw them was at mile 30. Which is a little, it's okay early on the race, but then like between mile 30 to 55, you hit some pretty low spots mentally, physically. And so you really are like praying, like, come on, get me to my crew. at that point.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. I mean, you said, what was your finish time? 22 hours and what?
22:46.
22:46. What was did you have a goal going into it, or was it just to enjoy it and finish in what you can, or what?
Yeah, so my goal actually was sub 24 because I had done 28:20-ish at Eastern States the year before. And so I wanted to break 24 hours. I knew that Western States is a very runnable course, and so I thought that was pretty feasible. In the back of my mind, I really wanted to break 22, which ended up not happening, but I'm perfectly happy with what I did. And so, yeah, that was my goal, was at least a sub 24.
How was the training leading up to it?
So it was pretty intense. It's now that I've looked back, hindsight's 20/20, and so you kind of think about things I've done and things I would do differently now. I tried to run roughly 60 miles a week. Like that was my goal. I really, last year I was doing more 40 to 50 mile weeks. And so I upticked it because I really wanted to give everything I had. And so I tried to run, like in the later weeks, I tried to run in the middle of the afternoon, like where it was the hottest part of the day, like just road getting beat down by the sun. And one long run and then several other like shorters and then maybe a mid run midweek. But a lot of my training kind of was dictated based on my job. I'm an anesthesiologist. So I have a lot of call I take and late days I work. And then there's other days that are very early and short depending on the operating room. And so, my running schedule was based really on my work schedule when I was free. The terrain out there is just so different than the terrain here. And so I wish I had have done, like I ran all the hills up till mile 45, like they're all runnable. And so that gets you in trouble later on. And so I should have slowed down a little bit more. I should have taken a little bit easier and then my quads wouldn't be as destroyed. All the downhill is runnable. And so you're flying down this downhill and you're trying to hold back, but you feel good. And then that gets you in trouble. And then the heat and the sun is just so different out there, whereas the humidity out here. So I had an idea what I was in for, but I had no idea how I was going to react to it. And I tried to do out here. I even did a lot of hill repeats, just up and down, trying to like get myself ready for like, okay, I want to be able to run as much uphill as I could.
I mean, we talked about a little before the show started about, trying to compare something like Eastern States 100 to Western States 100. And it's not even a question that should be asked. They're not comparable. they're both very difficult, but in very different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, of course, Western States trails are more buffed out and the hills are runnable and the downs are more runnable. That doesn't equal easy. That means it's going to be a lot harder, and you better train for that because you're going to be moving faster for 100 freaking miles. So, and again, like the heat is different, dry heat, the sun's closer, you're up higher. So, yeah, I think it's hilarious to even begin to I don't like comparing races in general, but to compare those two, it's night and day. They should both be respected for different reasons, and they should both, have their own merit of how hard they are.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
All right. And Marisa, I want to give you this opportunity. Sorry. I want to give you this chance to get a little more specific. Marisa had said, how are the trails? The Southern West Coast trails, I know, are a bore, she said. What's it like up there? Technical, challenging? So talk a little bit more about, and I think, obviously over the course of 100 miles, it's going to change a little bit. Tell us some more about the trails.
Sure. So when you first start off in Olympic Valley and you're running up the Fire Road, which is the first big climb, that's basically a gravel road. So that's pretty easy to comprehend. And then you get up top, and then the high country is what they call, that's when you're in the first like 20-ish miles. That is just beautiful, like outstanding, beautiful country. There you're running in mud because all the snow is melted and it's somewhat muddy, and you're running in wildflower, like fields of wildflowers. I remember writing in my like Facebook description, there's sage everywhere. Like the smell of the sage is amazing. Wow. And it's cool, crisp air. And you just end up flying. Like you just move, you just feel great. You're about 8,600 feet for that first section. And then you kind of dwindle down to average about, I believe they say about 7,000 feet for the first 20-ish miles. And so you're at elevation, but the majority of that, you have a little bit of mud in the first 10 miles, I'd say. And then it turns actually to a little bit more technical. I wasn't expecting technical, but it's a lot of loose rock. And you're slipping. You're slipping a lot because the shoes are kind of hovering over top of that loose gravel, and you're slipping and sliding. And then as you get more toward Duncan Canyon, which is mile 24, that's when it turns into California dust. And then it's just dust all the way. The guys out there call them buttery trails, and it's really true. They're non-technical. You have to hop over rocks, obviously, here and there, but dead grass all around you that's 3 feet tall. Wild grass, I mentioned before, you're running through canyons that wildfires have just gone through. And so there's dead trees that have been charred. So total sun exposure the entire day. And that was actually really hard. That was probably the thing that was the hardest. The heading into the canyons, those are, again, buttery trails, a little bit more technical. There's a little bit more rock. It's nothing like PA, obviously. With our rocks out here. The canyons, actually, I was kind of, not to go off trails, but the type of heat. So I was thinking of, so when I was out there, I was kind of expecting dry heat. Like that's what I'm expecting for the whole race. Out here, we just have high humidity all the time, it seems like, in the summer. But in those three canyons that you traverse, the first one's the biggest, and then it gets a little bit better. And the third one's a little bit smaller. They're still monstrous, but there was so much humidity in those canyons because the air is just isolated in there. It almost felt like I was running back in Pennsylvania, just under complete sun though.
Wow.
And so, then you get closer to Auburn and I just mean dust. Like Mike Heaston was running, it was pacing me from mile 78 on, and he was in front of me, and my headlamp looks like there's just a cloud in front of me. There's several times that I like picked my nose during the run and like during that part, and you just have tons of dust like dried and you're coughing. And there's nothing to do about it. And I talked to him afterwards and he was like, yeah, I had a cloud of dust in front of me from other runners that were in front of me. And I was like, there's no one in front for who knows how long, but it just stays in the air. But hopefully that answered that question without going on too long.
Oh, that was great. And it's, I mean, you're so right. There's just different challenges, no matter what. Every 100 miler is going to be difficult, and there's going to be different challenges. And having no shade, that's just, I don't know about all that. That sounds rough.
It was rough. Yeah. It was, yeah. Here in Pennsylvania, at least you get the canopy. And out there, I don't think I've never done a race like this before. So it was totally new. Mm-hmm. So I sunscreened up and all that jazz. But toward the end of the day, it's just, I think it really beat you down. Cause you can imagine just mm-hmm. being outside working in your yard for a couple hours. You're like, you come inside and you're like pretty like zonked, pretty tired, and just running in that. It was just, but so.
What about bugs?
Actually, bugs weren't a big deal. Couple of horse flies I swatted and killed that were annoying me. But in terms of gnats, nothing like that. It wasn't bad. Yeah.
Cause we have the canopy, which is nice, but you do get like a swarm of friends, like 20 gnats will just follow you.
Yes.
If you're running in Pennsylvania. Yeah. And now Marisa also asked, how was the river crossing? Now, did they boat you this year, or you got to cross this year, right?
Yep, you got to cross on foot. Nice. It was about I would say it's knee deep in some areas, and then it was over waist deep up to my belly button in other areas. And so, they had a string of volunteers along a guide rope that were actually standing in the river the whole time. And then they kind of guided you. It was really well done. They had the deep areas, they had glow sticks that were dropped. So you could actually see like where you could put your foot and how deep it was. Mm-hmm. It was cold water, as you can imagine. It wasn't that cold. It's not like mountain stream water here. I don't know what the temperature was, but it wasn't bad. But it was very refreshing. Like my leg, actually you have a mile climb right after you get out of the American River and up to Green Gate, which is the aid station there. And I was actually able to run that. So I got some energy back in my legs there, but it was pretty cool. Pretty cool experience.
Yeah. And now the course elevation maps, and I think this is true for 100 milers. Like when you look at the elevation map for 100 miler, like you got to do widescreen because when you compress it, it just looks, sometimes it just distorts what's actually happening. And Lacey commented in the chat, she said the course elevation map looks like a lot more downhill than uphill. Is that the case? And like, how did it feel like the case? How was that?
So I don't, yes, actually it did. Yeah. In all essence, I believe the numbers are, it's an 18,000 foot gain and there's 22,000 feet of descent. And so there's 4,000 more feet of down than up, but yes, the majority of the run, if you were not going uphill, you felt like you were running down. It did not feel like there was a lot of flat other than the five, 6+ miles that you're running along the American River before you actually get to the crossing. But yes, it actually absolutely felt like I was running downhill a lot. Other than the big climbs like the canyons and the first climb and whatnot.
And now we did get a follow-up question from Marisa, and anybody who knows Marisa will understand this question, and it's about the river crossing. How tall are you? Because waist deep is a subjective statement.
Sure. Yep. I'm 5'11".
Okay. So there you go, Marisa. Probably going to be like chest deep for her. Eric, wait. Does anybody else have a question? Eric, you have a question.
Mike, during the race, how much time did you spend running with other people and like being alone, or did you make a lot of friends?
I was actually alone the whole time.
Really?
I was alone the whole time. Some people gave me encouraging like comments as they like passed me by as I'm like dying climbing out of the canyons. I did talk to one guy. I forget his name, but he had run it. I believe he said 8 years ago, and he had done like a 20-hour. And so when I was kind of chatting with him about my goal time and my pace. And at that time, he was like, "You're gonna hit a 20-hour like." Finish and but I was starting to slow down but the majority of the time I was by myself. I ran I actually got to, I got to run with the elite women for the first like 15 miles.
Wow.
And so that was pretty cool. And I felt good. I felt relaxed. I probably I should have gone slower for the long haul, but I got to run with them. And then after that, I was just by myself. Yeah. The whole time.
Hmm.
So
it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, for all of there's a lot of volunteers. There's a lot of crew. There's a lot of pacers. There's a lot of people just there and watching and everything and there for the awesomeness of it. But in reality, it's only like 350 runners. Like it's a pretty small field over the course of 100 miles. So, and granted, everybody has to qualify to get in, but you know, some people are going to have a bad day or what have you. So and really you're going to end up with a pretty spread out field.
Yeah.
Now, in Pennsylvania specifically, and I know we have listeners from all over, but if you run in Pennsylvania at all, you know that Pennsylvania has some of the best aid stations. At least we like to think so. We like to think that. There's some great ones elsewhere too. But can you tell us a bit about the aid stations? How were they?
Yep. So nothing on Pennsylvania because it's my home, but the aid stations out there were world class, like the best. I don't know if many other races will be the top it. There are probably 10 to 12 volunteers at each one. They have 20 aid stations. So a lot of times you're running like 4 miles and you get to another one. Like there's a couple, there's a few longer sections in there, but it's pretty short intervals between them. But there's an aid station captain. It's so organized, it's not even funny. You enter and they immediately direct you saying ice is over here, cooling is here, nutrition is here, this is here, that's there. And they basically like, they pull your bottles out of your vest, like automatically. Wow. And you're kind of just like on autopilot at that point. And they're like, let's get you cooled off first. They're almost directing you. They're like, let's get you cooled off first. And you go over and they have a bucket filled with ice and like grout sponges for like tile that just absorb and they just soak you and then all over your head. And they'll have hoses and they're hosing you down. They fill your water up at the same time. And then after you get cooled off, then they walk you right to the nutrition. And if you want anything there. But yeah, it was like, it was world class. I did my very best to get in and out as fast as possible. I didn't want to, I knew that you can burn a good hour to two if you spend a lot of aid stations, especially with 20 on a list. You're there 5 minutes. That's a lot of time. And so, I tried to get in and out within less than 2 minutes on each one. But yeah, really amazing. The food was great. I really didn't eat much from them other than watermelon during the day. And then when I got to mile 65, that's when I started eating broth. So I don't know if they had that kind of stuff earlier. The one thing that Pennsylvania has on them is pierogies. I love boiled pierogies at races for especially the longer ones. And they didn't have any. They just had salted potatoes. They just weren't the same. And so
yeah, they got to get on the pierogi bus. The first time I saw this was in West Virginia. I was running Miner's Lady, and that's the sponge in the ice cold water. And I'm telling you, if you run an aid station, it is just an awesome thing to have. You have a bucket of ice water and you can't do a rag. You got to do a sponge and you dump the sponge in there. And when the runners come in, you just squeeze it right across their shoulders, right on top of their head, and it feels amazing. I want to spread that one because it's awesome.
Yep. That's something that they probably could add to Eastern States aid stations. And so I know they do ice. I know I did an ice bandana when I ran it last year, but if they had like some cooling in each, especially during the daylight hours, they can obviously stop overnight, but it really does rejuvenate you at least for a few miles, like three miles you can get through and you're running fast again. And then you start to get hot, you know, and then you got to struggle for a mile or two or three, sometimes three or four more until you get to the next aid station. But it definitely helps big time. It calms your stomach down. The heat can mess your stomach up.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it can really help.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Oh, I got more questions. Eric, you go for the next one.
I forgot all mine. I don't have any left.
Okay, so tell us the highest high. I don't want to hear about the finish yet. Okay. Highest high during the course.
So I think that would probably be between maybe mile 20 to 30. That's when I felt the best. Obviously the start is the start. Like the start, you're all amped up and you're running the high country. Maybe I should say that is the very start, because that was the high. And then I hit a low spot between 15 to 20. Cause then it's like, then you kind of set in of like, I got a long way to go yet. And I'm like, I think I went out a little too fast. And so the legs are like burning a little bit and you're like, I'm going to back off. And then the belly's kind of like, it's like, I'm going to back off. And then I got into a low spot. And then I was like, once I hit mile 25, I'm like, started feeling good again. And I'm like, okay, let's get girl. And then I'm like, my cruise in 5 miles. And so then that would probably be my next high. And then, then from mile 30 to 55 was my low.
Oh, but, what did you do to push through? Like what was happening?
So I just kind of focused on, so I think the thing that got to me was the heat, like you're in the canyons, you got so much further to go until you see your crew again at mile 55. And so what gets me through is two things really, just thinking about my crew, just getting to them. And I focus on that. I don't even look at my watch in terms of like counting the miles, cause I feel like that actually hurts you more, but I just stare at the ground in front of me or whatever in front. And I just kind of stare and I kind of zone out. I just run. I try not to think about what hurts. It that's hard, obviously. And then the other thing that keeps me going is my crew has sacrificed so much to go out there, and I have put so much work in to go out there. I told myself it is hell or high water that I'm not finishing this run, and so it actually that helps. It keeps me going. It keeps moving, and I'm a determined individual, so that's it keeps me going.
Yeah. I mean, stuff happens and that's just the nature of trail running, whether you get stung by a bee in the foot, like Killian Jornet, or a branch attacks your face in the beginning of World's End. Like, you know, sometimes you just get a DNF that happens. I think it does help to think like, I don't want this all to feel like it's never for nothing, but you know, you really want to get that finish. All right. Okay. So tell us about the finish. Let's do that.
Yep. So it was awesome. It's everything you kind of can expect with Western. And so, they have you run across the No Hands Bridge, which everyone probably has seen pictures of all the flags of the countries as the elites run past it the afternoon before. So you get there and then you're like, you can see the lights up on the hill, and you're like, okay, I'm so close. And then those bastards put a huge hill at the end. And it's like, I don't know how many feet it was. I didn't even look up on my watch to see. It felt like a 1,000-foot climb, and it just takes your soul. And you're like dying trying to get up this last bump. And then you get to Robbie Point, and that's actually where I got to see my crew. So one thing that Western does that's awesome is they allow your crew to run with you to the finish. Mm-hmm. And so they meet you at Robbie Point, which is, I believe, 98.9. I got it written down here. 98.9 mm-hmm. miles. And then they actually get to run with you all the way to the finish. And so that's very special. Because I really do think that I haven't just been the one that ran the mileage. They were there with me. I might have done it on foot the whole way, but they did the whole journey too. And so it's a really way to kind of like cultivate and bring it all together. And so, but the last road, when you get up the last climb and the last road section, there's a little bump and then it's flat to the finish. But you're in so much pain. You're just like, my quads were wrecked. You're like just looking at the lights for the stadium and then you see them. And at that point, your feet, when their feet hit the soft track, it's enlightening. It's a crazy feeling. It's from joy to like almost crying to like, I did it. I'm at Western States. I'm about to finish. And such a, you know, I thought about my family right away. It was epic. epic experience.
Is it real? Did it really happen?
I guess. I got pictures. And I got a belt buckle somehow.
Well, that description should make anybody want to do it. I mean, really.
Yeah. It's yeah. Yep.
So, and would you, I'm going to, Marisa asked the question, was it, you know, like, it's like Boston Marathon, and I ran Boston, and it was more amazing than I kind of anticipated it going to be. So I probably would say I would go back just for the, like, the people and the cheering aspect of Boston Marathon. Would you go back to Western States just because it's Western States, or you know, did you get out of it what you think you wanted to in a lifetime?
Yeah, I think I would go back. I think if you asked me that at mile 80, I would have said something else at the time, naturally. But 100%, I would go back, not only because it's Western States, all the stuff that goes along with it. It was just such a cool experience. The other reason I wouldn't want to go back is I learned a lot. I learned, you know, you do a race one time and you haven't trained on any of those trails. There's so many things that I would have done differently now. In terms of my nutrition, my salt intake, my effort at the beginning, holding on to effort at the end. And so there's a lot of things I would like to do again. And so absolutely, if I got in again, I would go again. Yep.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of people that already hate you because you got in my ticket. So if you get in again, I think you might be just wiped out of Pennsylvania and get out of here.
That would be pretty cool. Now, you said that you learned a lot from this time around. Lacey had asked, if you got in again, what would you do differently?
So I would focus out here. I think I would do a lot more dry sauna. I actually had a steam sauna that's a pop-up one that's in my basement. And so I did that to get hot and get sweaty. I would do a dry sauna to really get used to heat. And then I would actually like try and exercise in it. And so whether it be push-ups, or like even like someone else just said, like act like you're boxing and just like box in a dry sauna. So you want to get your heart rate up, get used to getting hot. That's one thing. And then I would focus on run. I would find climbs out here kind of like I did, but do a little bit more in terms of runnable climbs and just do repeat climbs. Yeah. And then I would focus a lot more on, and I do strength work in my legs, but I would focus a lot more on my quads and strength for running downhill. And, and so, like, as you guys know, the hills out here in Waterville, it's like those hills that you run down, they're somewhat steep. So you have to shuffle, you know, down it. Whereas those hills, you're running, you're stretched out, and those quads are taking impact every time you stretch out. And so I'd focus on that. I'd focus on my nutrition better. I think what ended up happening was you're in the sun the entire time. Your sweat's evaporating because you're at elevation. It's not the same humidity out here where you can feel it all on you. So you're getting behind in terms of that. You're getting behind in terms of salt. And so I wish I had been a little bit more on it in terms of my electrolytes, because my stomach got a little bit iffy. Then I stopped. Then I backed off eating a little bit. And then I backed off taking salt tablets because sometimes they make my stomach bloated. And then it was just this circle down, spiral down. And I remember getting to Forest Hill, which is my 100K, and I popped two salt tabs. Mine are the salt lick ones. So there's two per hour is what they recommend. So I popped two of those. 20 minutes later, I popped another two. And then 10 minutes later, I popped another two. So I took six within a span of 30 minutes. And I could tell at that point, I'm like, okay, I think I'm stabilizing a little bit. So I was really far behind.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, I think those are the kind of things I would do in terms of being sun exposed. Like I tried to do that as much as I could with afternoon runs here. It's just, but the sun's just different. I don't know if I could, you know, mimic that out here.
Yep.
So, but yeah, a lot of things to learn and improve on. So I definitely will. I'll definitely enter again. Don't tell my wife, but.
Secret safe.
Yeah.
What's next for you?
Well, actually, I have Ironstone this Saturday.
Nice.
I had signed up for that. I know it sounds stupid running that so soon, but I had signed up for that and convinced two friends to do it with me before I got into Western. And so then I didn't want to bail on them. And so I was like, I'm just going to wait and see how it goes. And I'm feeling pretty good. I know my endurance is gonna just hit the toilet at some point. So I'm just gonna see how it goes. I know the back 40 of that race is not the most runnable, and so that's why I'm kind of still doing it, because it's like, it's not like I'll run myself in the ground. It'll be a lot of rock hopping and whatnot. And then I pace my friend Mike Houston, who paced me for Western. I pace him for Eastern States this coming year. And then I have Boulder Beast in September as a training run kind of deal. And then I ran Black Forest last year, the counterclockwise, I believe, odd year. And then I'm running at the clockwise direction this year. So I'm going to do Black Forest. And then my buddy Mike Tromley is running his first 100 Rim to River in November or October. And I'm going to pace him for that. So that's kind of my year. So
pretty good. Wow.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. That's a busy year. I thought you told your wife you were going to back off this year.
Yeah, I know. I know.
It's fine. We all say it.
Yep. She'll tell you she's heard it a lot of times.
Yeah. We all say it. We all do it. It's fine.
Yep.
He'll be fine.
Yep. He'll be fine.
Well, good luck this weekend.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You gonna wear your buckle through the race?
Yeah, that might create more chafing than I desire. So
Do you have it? Do you have it with you?
I do. You want it? Yep, I have it. I figured maybe you guys would want to see it, but
see the cougar.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can see it there. Yep.
Sub 24.
Nice. Yep,
so.
Well, congrats. That's an awesome achievement, awesome memory. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, yep. And I love that you just soaked it all in and you didn't take it for granted. You really said, hey, I got in on one ticket. Like, let's get this thing done. You put in the hard work to get it done and you did.
Yep.
Ah, that's fabulous. Yep.
Thank you. And just so you know, this is the finisher shirt. I don't wear weird shirts normally, but it's
very cool.
It's got a lot of stuff on it. So
it's busy.
Yep, it's busy.
Oh, button downs are the best, man. That's another great idea for races, is to do a button down. In the summertime, I'll often race in a button down because you can.
The material in this, you can clearly run in it. It's very.
Is it Rabbit?
Sweat wicking.
No, it's probably Hoka, isn't it?
So, yes, it is. Yep. Yeah. Yep. It's Hoka, but I believe it's Rabbit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I've got a Rabbit button down that I just wore that on Sunday. Actually, they have some great button downs, because I have to give this tip to people out there. People will say, what shirt can I wear that doesn't cause chafing, but it's cool in the summer? And I'm telling you, it's the button down, because you got your back covered, but you can leave it open in the front and then it's nice and cool.
Yep. Yep. I actually, when I was out there, they have a store that you can buy stuff, obviously, swag and gear and whatnot. And Hoka had some singlet shirts, and they're on their website. I don't remember the name of it, but it is the lightest sleeveless tee. And it was I ended up putting it on, I think, at mile 30, and I ran the entire rest of the run with it, other than switching to the Heiner shirt at the end. And for those that need like a really light sleeveless tee, that was amazing. It's almost like running without a shirt. It's so light. And when it gets wet, you can actually see through it. It's just so skinny. And so I bought a few more of them when I came back home. And so I definitely recommend those.
Nice.
It's a fun excuse to buy more gear too.
Exactly. Yeah,
it doesn't take me much. I'll be getting to buy them now. Thank you. All right, Grace, we got to wrap it up.
We do. Man, this was such a fun episode. Mike, thanks for coming on and talking.
Thank you for having me.
Experience.
We know what you're doing this coming weekend, Mike, with Ironstone. Yep. Grace, what the heck are you doing this weekend?
This weekend, I'm going to go on an adventure. I'm going to drive myself all the way up to northern Pennsylvania and run around in circles with some very awesome people. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
How about you? What are you doing this weekend?
The Idiot Adventures this weekend. Yes.
That's right. I'm going up. It's going to be fun. Get ready. Yeah. Do you have the couch? Couch is ready.
Couch is ready. The floor is ready. If you piss me off. Yeah, we're good. Everything's set.
Okay.
Got 50 to 60 some people coming. It's going to be a super fun time. Yeah, I got insurance, so if anybody breaks themselves, I don't care. It's amazing.
It's going to be good. I'm excited. I could use a nice long run with a little bit of gain in there, and this is the weekend to do it.
Absolutely, and we'll probably talk a little about it next Monday.
That sounds fabulous. I like it.
All right, Mike. Thanks again for giving us your time. Phenomenal job. Maybe it seems like we say this everybody, but everybody we have on is awesome. But without your adventures the rest of the year, maybe we can have you on sometime towards the end of the year to talk about how everything went.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Now, couple other things that we have going on. There is an episode of the Mullet Chronicles because I finally got some time to record one. So the Mullet Chronicles, if you don't know about it already, I read race reports and I would love to read your race report. So if anybody out there listening has an awesome race report and you want me to read it, these are pre-recorded episodes. So these episodes are not live like this one. They're pre-recorded. Sometimes I record them five or six times until I'm happy with it. But it's race reports from other runners. And I read them word for word. And so it's great to listen to because if you don't have time to read them, well, you can just listen to them. And if you don't want to listen to me, well, then you can go read them. So you got options. Now, the most recent episode is from Jen Henry. She's an awesome, awesome runner. And the race report itself was from 2010. So it's 14 years old, which is pretty cool because now it's from when she was a brand new runner and she ran Hellgate 100K. Really well written and you should check it out. But again, those are the pre-recorded ones. So they kind of drop at different times. So go check that out and check us out here every Monday, 7:30 live. And also give us some likes, give us some reviews. And we will read those likes and reviews and all of those things on the podcast. And we had a most recent review. I'm pulling it up right now. Hold on. Talk about the next thing.
Okay, I'll talk about real quick about this rabid raccoon thing that's got me all fired up.
Oh, yeah.
Rabid Raccoon is a cool looped 13-mile loop, 100-mile option, 100K option, 50K option out in Western PA, Beaver County. It's at a cool park. This year, they did came up with this amazing idea to increase female participation, mm-hmm. which needs to be done across the sport. Yeah. But it seems like it's a very simple thing to try to do, but not many races want to do it. If you sign up as a female, you get a free registration for another female to gift to another female. Mm-hmm. Boy, I would think if I'm a female and I'm on the fence about doing a long, hard race, if I can get it for free, that's going to put me over the edge a little more. Don't you think, Grace?
You know, here was my reaction.
No, don't go too far into it. Don't you think, though?
I want to go into this. I'm going to go there.
Hurry so up.
When I read this, I was like, I don't know about that. Money really isn't the issue. There's these other things that are the issue.
No.
Listen to me. Because okay. 2 seconds, not even. You know what? What is the partial second? I already forgot.
Yeah, a jiffy.
In a jiffy, I remembered that the whole reason why I signed up for the Baker Trail Challenge last year is because they were raffling off free race entries because they were trying to increase female participation. So right. It works.
It's the one thing you can do is suck it up and give some free registrations to female athletes. You will get more female participation, period. Great job to Rabid Raccoon for throwing it out there, to sacrificing some income for the race. And I can't wait to see what the numbers end up being for their 100K, 100-mile race this year as far as the splits between female and male runners because of this. So kudos to them. I hope other races can follow suit.
Yeah, I already know one person who signed up. I'm not telling.
Yep.
All right. You want to hear this review? We got a new review.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. Let me get into my space.
Right? Almost over an hour. Hurry up.
Shh. It's fine. This is titled Must Listen for Beast Coast Runners by Andy Callie. Grace and Eric host an awesome show that is both entertaining and knowledgeable, interviewing some incredible people, not only in the Pennsylvania trail running scene, but the Northeast region as well. A one-stop shop of training tips, race reviews, and FKT information, as well as quirky jokes, Eric's fun facts, and more often than not, very heartfelt conversation. I never miss an episode. It's never too late to become a hair in the mullet.
Wow. Why can't you other people that are listening do pure magic like that? That is amazing. Come on.
So write us a review.
Yeah.
Write us a review. Like it. So that more people can enjoy this little show and we'll keep it going.
Yeah.
And we'll keep it going next week.
All right. Mike, thanks again for your time. We appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the year.
Yep. Grace, appreciate it.
See you this weekend, Grace.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Bye.